This is a CBC original podcast.
I think the basic facts were enough to drive the protest to begin with. You have a young black man, unarmed, lying dead in the street for hours, shot dead by a white police officer, with no apparent crime being committed. But then, to compound it, there was the testimony of witnesses to reporters that they had seen Michael Brown turn around and raise his hands. And that seemed to many to confirm that he was actually surrendering when he was shot to death. And it was from that we got the chant that was heard night after night. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot.
Don't shoot.
Hands up.
We just said hands up, don't shoot.
Don't shoot.
We scared. We don't trust the police.
What happened to Michael Brown has deeply divided us.
They're mad. I'm mad. We should all be mad, man. We should all be angry.
The problem is not just a Ferguson problem. It is an American problem.
Don't shoot. Hands up. Don't shoot.
But let me start at the beginning. I'm Keith Bogue, and this is Backstory, Ferguson, Missouri, 2014.
An altercation took place at the car with Officer Wilson seated inside the vehicle and Mr. Brown standing at the driver's window.
At that time, he reached out the window. He didn't get out the car. He just reached his arm out the window and grabbed my friend around his neck.
Mr. Brown ran east on Canfield and Officer Wilson gave chase.
He's running this way. He turns his body, hands in the air, being compliant. He gets shot in his face and chest.
As Michael Brown moved toward Officer Wilson, several more shots were fired by the officer, and Michael Brown was fatally wounded.
Everybody want me to be calm. Do you know how them bullets hit my son? What they did, just they hit his body.
Well, I think the essential fact is what drove the whole thing. And the essential fact was an 18-year-old black kid who hadn't done anything wrong as far as the police knew was shot to death, even though he was unarmed. Those facts alone were enough to drive the anger that we saw.
I said indict, convict, send that killer cop to jail!
That was the set of circumstances. Those were the set of facts that people said, this has just happened all too often now.
I'm tired of us being mistreated as a whole by the police department. They feel like they have the authority to do what they want to do, and I feel like that's not right.
One of the last nights when I was in Ferguson started out very kind of quietly, and I remember phoning the desk back in Toronto saying, I don't think there's going to be any trouble tonight. I think it's probably pretty much over. Boy, did I turn out to be wrong. Suddenly, from what I could tell, nowhere, there was suddenly a wave of people, a wave of protesters marching down the street steadily towards the police lineup. And the police had been standing sort of quietly with their riot shields, just sort of observing things, but not seeing any trouble that meant that they had to act. And suddenly a flood of people, like a tidal wave, comes down the street right at them. In the crowd, there were those who wanted it to be a very, very aggressive, threatening crowd almost, and they were being restrained by other members in the crowd. So you have this struggle going on, and that started to get really, really tense until suddenly, of course, there were smoke bombs and tear gas fired.
Well, from various vantage points, Keith, we're seeing the same cloud of what appears to be tear gas that you're seeing there. If you need to put your mask on, obviously feel free to do that. And needless to say, if you need to get out of there, we totally understand.
Sorry, Ian. A lot of stuff going on around me here as people are jumping over the fence. There are people spitting up next to me. They've been in contact, obviously, with tear gas. And we hear more of it being fired into the air.
And it happens, you know, in the context of the Trayvon Martin killing in Florida in 2013 and then the Zimmerman trial that exonerated Trayvon Martin's killer. And that spawned the movement that we now know as Black Lives Matter. But nothing shone a light on Black Lives Matter to the degree that the death of Michael Brown did in Ferguson. And I think that what African-Americans who protest this are saying is that regardless of what you think about how the shooting happened, who was charging whom, whether Michael Brown had his hands up, the fact remains that the incident never would have happened. Michael Brown would not have been stopped and treated the way he was if he wasn't a black man. So therefore, it's a racial incident. Michael Brown would be alive today if he wasn't a young black kid. That's a fairly strong and compelling argument, I think.
It's so scary now. You don't know who to trust. You don't know who the good guys is or who the bad guys is because of this situation. So out here, people are fearful. People are scared. And they have the right to be scared.
I was at the memorial in the street for Michael Brown, looking at where the flowers had been placed and the teddy bears and the signs, wishing Michael Brown well and remembering what had happened there. And there was a young woman standing there looking at the same thing that I was. And so I went over to her and I just started chatting with her.
I have a 12-year-old son. And one of the big reasons that I didn't move back to St. Louis after I graduated from college is because I know the area. I know situations like this, and I didn't think that it would be a smart place to raise my son.
She'd used to live in the neighborhood, and she'd come back because of this crime. She wanted to be with friends and family that she used to know there. And how sad she was about the whole thing. And in the middle of it, I asked her about the talk.
Yes, that breaks my heart. My son and I have had the talk.
And the talk is the talk that black mothers feel they have to tell black children.
And it's the talk that you let your son know that, hey, the world you live in, I hate to break it to you, is a little bit different from those of your classmates.
And the talk is about how you have to understand that you aren't like other kids because you're black.
There are going to be situations that you're going to run into, and it won't have anything to do a lot of the times with anything that you've done wrong, but people do have these preconceived ideas about who you are just because of what others have done or because of somebody's fear of the unknown.
And what that means is that you have to be extra careful, particularly in some situations where you feel you're being treated unfairly. You've got to be very measured in how you react to that, and most particularly when you're dealing with the police.
So unfortunately, you're going to be stereotyped, and sometimes you're going to be treated in a way that's really unfair, but I just need you to know how to handle it in a way that won't make matters worse for you.
There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me.
Well, I think the thing about Ferguson that I had thought in the months since I've been there is that there were always going to be two competing narratives. Those who thought that the story was about specifically what happened on that Saturday afternoon between Michael Brown and Darren Wilson, and that you couldn't make a judgment about that without having all of the facts. And then there was the competing narrative about, no, this is the experience of young black men in America. It has a meaning way beyond that, and it's telling us something about America, about policing in America, about young black men in America that we have to pay attention to because they are dying. And I think the thing is that both those stories are true, and they don't cancel each other out at any time.
The grand jury deliberated over 2 days. They determined that no probable cause exists to file any charge against Officer Wilson.
A first-year law student would have did a better job of cross-examining a killer of an unarmed person than the prosecutor's office did.
When I heard no charges, it really brought tears to my eyes. Not one charge did he get indicted on, nothing. Once again, this legal system ain't for us. Whether you white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. Lives matter. That man shot 7 times in his hand, in his eye. You can't justify that. You can't.
The fact that Officer Darren Wilson may have been acting in self-defense, as the grand jury ultimately decided that he was, is perhaps the truth, the specific truth of that event. But you cannot ignore how often the same set of facts present themselves in America, and I think we know that now. How often we see a story about a young black man being shot, unarmed, a young black unarmed man being shot by police, or dying, as we saw in New York in the chokehold. You know, the fact that there were specific facts that may have justified what Darren Wilson did in Ferguson does not mean that there isn't a problem, and a very serious problem, because of the number of times that young black men unarmed are being killed by police. It's just a fact.
I guess it's hard to have a normal life after someone is lying dead.
Mm-hmm.
Something you think that will always haunt you?
I don't think it's a haunting. It's always going to be something that happened.
Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. I'm Keith Bogue.
For more CBC original podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.